Good morning. I would like to maybe spark some thought, encourage some thought, some consideration. I'd be glad to get some wheels turning. I don't have a lot of. I've got an idea. An exercise that I want to encourage us in, but I don't have any references here. I have an idea of a couple of scriptures. Maybe people can help me as I'm sharing, try to think of scriptures that that would apply to what I'm going to share. I want to talk about intentionally adjusting your perspective. There's different ways to look at things. There's a famous allusion to this. It says, are you a glass as high? If there's a glass and it's this big and there's this much water in it, they say, if you look at that glass, do you say, oh man, that glass is half empty? Or do you look at that glass and say, oh, that glass is half full? They call it, whether or not you're pessimistic or an optimistic person, if you look on the bright side, like, oh, look how much water is in there, you look like, or do you look at the glass and say, oh, look at all that emptiness that is there. so there's different ways to look at things, different perspectives. And I want to encourage us, or I want to remind us that the nature of the flesh or the nature of immaturity is to not do this thing. And it's something we have to intentionally, I would encourage us to intentionally develop the habit of trying to look at things, trying to look at the positive in things, trying to look at the bright side, as they say. It's a game I like to play with myself. If I get discouraged, if I'm thinking a situation is bad, I try to think of a way that it can be good, or the good in a situation. Let's see, you might be familiar with some of these things. I'm just going to rattle off some examples. This one makes me think of Robert Caine. This whole thing, there's several things that make me think of you, Robert Caine. One is, there's a saying that says, I'm going to mess it all up, but something to the effect of, I used to be sad that I didn't have any shoes. I was sad that I didn't have any shoes until I met a man who didn't have any feet. You ever heard that one? It's kind of a famous one. Yeah, it's just, changed my perspective. Think I can look down and be sad I don't have shoes, or I can be really thankful that I have feet. It's easy to get impatient when you're driving. The person in front of you is going slow, or you're waiting for somebody to turn and they don't turn and you think they ought to turn, or somebody cuts you off or just isn't making efficient decisions and it affects you, and you can, if you're not in the right frame of mind, that can cause impatience, it can cause frustration. And one thing I used to try to do, there was a particular brother that I really loved, and I thought to myself, if somebody cuts me off, I think, what if that was that brother? Well, I'd be like, oh, well, he must not have been paying attention. You know, he didn't see me. He would have never done that on purpose. Like, it just really, really freed me up. Oh, here's a lesson I learned one time. I was in a hurry, and there was a person driving really slowly in front of me, like way too slow, and I was just frustrated and frustrated and frustrated. And finally, the opportunity arose that I was able to pass the person, and I was like, oh, this person. And I sped up and got alongside and looked over, and it was just this little old lady driving, and I felt so bad. So now I intentionally try to, if I'm getting frustrated, what if that's a little old lady? You never know what somebody's going through. There's another one. They say never judge a person till you walk a mile in their moccasins, is how they say it. And instead of taking things at face value or what they seem to be, or, and especially from a selfish perspective, remember, remember others. We don't know what other people are going through. We don't know all the circumstances. We can't always judge a situation. And so it's good to exercise yourself, even if something looks bad, to say, well, you know, maybe this happened, and that's why this is happening. And try to, make excuses is the right word, but try to consider the possibilities of what you might be misunderstanding. Benefit of the doubt is what they call that one. this will happen with children. As a parent, children, listen to this. As a parent, yeah, let's say you decide, I want to give all my children some kind of treat. A popsicle, a donut, I don't know. And this is the dilemma. Do I get all one kind? Or do I get a variety and let people choose? Anybody ever encountered this situation, this thing that happened? If I get a variety, well, somebody's going to be sad that they didn't get a chocolate or a strawberry or whatever. Imagine being sad because that you got a donut. How is it possible? It was a riddle I asked my children. How is it possible to be sad that you got a donut? Because you didn't get the donut you wanted. Like, who's sad that they got a donut? Anyway, that's something maybe you might not get the right donut, but what if you were in that situation and there was chocolate donuts and you didn't get the chocolate donut you wanted, and now you got a strawberry donut, and you like strawberry donuts, but not as much as chocolate donuts. What if there were no chocolate donuts and everybody just got a strawberry one? Then you'd be happy, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, try to imagine something like that, and it can help you. I like to drink coffee. Sorry, Robert Kane. I don't think it's a sin. I love you too. Thanks. I don't think it's a sin. And I appreciate low quality coffee. I appreciate high quality coffee. It's rare that coffee is so bad that I won't drink it. But I imagine if I imagine this scenario. If I was a missionary, and this is, I'm saying coffee, but I apply this to food as well. Nobody likes it when rice is maybe undercooked or beans are undercooked. You know, they're supposed to be soft, and when they're a little crunchy, you know, it's hard to deal with. We can be tempted to complain. We can be tempted to be unthankful. And so one thing that I do is if food maybe isn't tasty, I imagine if I was a missionary, if I was up trekking through mountains, trying to visit the poor people, really poor people, third world poor people, and I get invited into a home, and some little old lady invites me into her home, and she's like, "Oh, come in, sit down, and oh, let me get you something to drink, and here's some food," and she gives me her food, and she's like, "Oh, let me coffee," and she can't afford to be giving away coffee, she can't afford to be giving away her food, and she's being so generous and so giving and so thoughtful and so kind. No way am I going to say, like, "Oh, this food's kind of meh. I don't know. Oh, this, look at my friend and say, this rice is kind of undercooked. Like, I'm going to eat it. I'm going to be so thankful." And I imagine it would even maybe taste better than it normally would. Here's a scripture says that when you're full, you don't even want to eat honey. But when you're hungry, even bitter herbs, even things that don't usually taste good are taste good. There's a scripture encouraging us to change our perspectives. Sometimes I'll be frustrated because I have an inferior tool of some kind, and it's good for me to remember, like, well, at least I've got this tool and not another kind. Working with Dwayne, like, we'll upgrade tools. He a lot of the work that we now do with a skid steer, he used to do by hand when he first started, and now we've upgraded to fancier tools, and sometimes they break. It won't work. We'll have to go back to the old ones that are on the truck that we haven't used in a long time. And it's funny, like, remember this is, we're like, I guess we'll have to use that one. And we're like, remember when this was our tool, this is what we had. I once had an earache. Yeah, anybody ever had an earache? I guess they can vary. It was so bad. It was mind numbing. It was driving me insane. It hurt so bad, and it was so persistent, and it was just such an extreme situation. And I told myself, for the rest of my life, no matter what is happening, no matter how bad things are, how bad things get, I can always be thankful that I don't have an earache. I mean, it was just so bad. it's good for us to look at the bigger picture of things instead of just what's right before us. I can't remember what it was, but there was some time I was involved in some event, and the event was about something. But then whenever there's an event surrounding some important thing, there's little things. You got to remember the bathroom. You got to remember parking. There's all these little things that aren't as important, but they're there. And I was involved. I can't remember. I'm just going to say in parking or bathroom, some minor thing. And I just thought it was so important. And I was just like, hey, this thing isn't working out. Somebody was supposed to do this thing. We don't have this thing, and it's not going to work. And it was supposed to be like this. And the person being just like, oh, okay, thanks for telling me. That's okay. And I was like, oh, I think this thing's a really big deal, but I have to remember, like, this whole event is about this other thing, and this is just a little side thing. To me, it was my job, so it was a big deal, but putting it in perspective, it really didn't matter when it came to the big picture. what we're concerned about what people think, we need to change our perspective and think. Remember that what matters is what he thinks. Remember what is he going to think on the day of judgment? That's what really matters. We can curb our desires by changing our perspective. Remembering there's things that we want. There's things that are rewarding. But if we remember that they're just temporary, we intentionally remember. Oh, this is just temporary. This is going to pass. It doesn't matter. Like, it can help us to remember these things. One thing is to remember how our actions affect other people. I think something happens in a person that they lose their conscience. Like, I'm thinking of thieves, just go around stealing things without considering, like, how it affects the person that they're stealing from. They exercise themselves in not thinking of the perspective of anybody else. Sometimes a proper perspective comes from experience. you can get trying to think of, like, two young people, one person from the city, one person from the country, and they have to do a little job, and the person from the city is like, oh, this is so hard, because he's never worked, you know, and the country kid is just like, you know, just like does it, like it's no big deal, like what's next, you know, he does chores all day long or whatever. thinking of, I've been to different events that somebody had to organize, when I was young, I never considered it. I just showed up. I just enjoyed it. Just, oh, eat this, do this, da 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 da. And then when you get older, you realize, oh, somebody planned that out. Somebody ordered that, organized that. There's been so much planning that has gone into that. After you've participated in helping to organize some kind of event, now when you go to other events, they all look different. Now you're like, oh, look at the... You think of it in the perspective of the organizer. You're like, oh, look how they did that. Oh, that must have taken forever. My family and I went to Kansas... I think it was Kansas City, and they have an old... I think it's a train station there. And it's huge. I know there's probably bigger ones in bigger cities, but it's huge. I don't know how many stories. The ceiling just goes so far up. And then way, way up there, there's like these arches and domes and pictures, and it's so vast, and pillars and all this intricate architecture. And it now after, when I was younger, I had no perspective. I just, you know, either not care or maybe think it was beautiful. And now having had experience in construction and concrete and stuff, I'm just like, whoa, that must have taken so long. How did they do that? How many men had to do this? Like, what kind of equipment was necessary to do these things? A phrase or something says it. If not for the, I think it says something like, if not for the grace of God, there go I think is how it goes. And it's just, this is an example of somebody like, you see somebody, maybe addicted to drugs, just making bad choices in their lives, hurting other people, being so selfish, however it is, just with a ruined life, rather than saying like, oh, that's, what a bad person. Remember, if it wasn't, the only reason I'm not like that is because the grace of God in my life, because people help me, because God helped me. That we're all subject to the same passions. One of the most encouraging things a man ever said to me, after I had failed, he said, "Buddy, I'm made out of the same dirt you are." Jesus said, "Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you." Like that's an encouragement to, as you're doing something to someone, stop, consider, change your perspective. What if you were on the receiving end of this? Is this what you would want done to you? Another one, a child's not eating their food, and the mother from the 1960s or 1970s would say, "There's starving people in China." The mother's saying, change your perspective, be thankful. Well, Robert Cain told a story about a mother who had saved her child from a fire and got her hands all marred, and the child didn't know. And one day says, just innocently, "Mama, why are your hands so ugly?" And it broke the mama's heart. And she explains to her, and then, you know, with maturity, the daughter says, "Oh, my mother has the most beautiful hands in the world because they saved her life." consider. I mean, we have all this. We have cars and electronics and electricity and lights and tools and all these things. And it's a good thing to just remember that we are just created beings. God made us. Everything we have has been given to us. baby humans are not independent. Some animals, they hatch or they get born, and they're just off on their own, and they're fine, and they make it to maturity. And human beings aren't like that. And everybody in this room is only here because other human beings invested in you. They changed your diapers. They fed you. Otherwise, we would not have made it. We every one of us owes our lives, not just to God, but to other human beings. Proper perspective should invoke great humility. When we consider things the right way, every one of us should should be humble. I tell my children sometimes, I just got here a little before you did. There's this idea, you know, I'm the papa, I'm this old wise man. I mean, when we look at the big scale of things, like I'm just barely ahead of them. Just a very few years of experience, of schooling, and they're already passing me up in all kinds of ways. remind ourselves, none of us chose to be here. God put us here. We just got born. No matter how much money you have, how nice a car you have, whatever kind of things, just to remember these things. There was a family, and they had a rule that older children could, I can't remember what it was, but had some kind of authority over younger children. Younger children had to listen to older children to some degree, and then they had some twins, and one of the twins was a few minutes older than the other one, and so they had, so, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know, that if you know my family, you know that patience should probably do what Compa or Esperanza tell her to do, but you know, you had two children the exact same age, and one of them, because of this rule in this family, had to submit and obey this their brother or sister that was the same age because they were a couple minutes older. When I was little, younger, I used to vandalize things without make messes, without considering somebody's going to have to clean this up, somebody's going to have to fix this. Somebody's going to have to pay for this. if your glass is this big and you only have this much water, you can be thankful that there's that your glass can hold more water. If your glass had this much water and it was full, you couldn't put any more in there. I want to encourage us just toward. I used to have this imagination of starting a speech by saying, I know this isn't popular, but I'm a glass is half empty kind of person. Nobody wants to admit to being a glass is half empty kind of person. The whole, are you a glass is half empty, glass is type full kind of person? I mean, behind that whole thing is don't think that it's half empty. Realize that it's half full. That's the whole thing. It's like, you know, and I would have had this perspective. What good does that do anybody? Like, I need to focus. If the goal is for the glass to be full, that's what I need to focus on. And it shouldn't be like, oh, well, it's. I had this idea, like, well, if I just encourage myself that it's half full, that's going to promote laziness. That's going to make me say, oh, hey, look, it's half full. If I tell somebody, oh, look, you got your glass half full there, they're going to. They're not going to try as hard to fill it up. They're going to think, oh, they've already accomplished something. We need to focus on the fact that we haven't fully accomplished our goal and focus on that and to see what we need to work on. And that's along with that goes pointing out flaws to people because that's what they need to work on. And you're just trying to help them. That's what they need. Everybody needs to work on flaws. And I think there's something to that, but ultimately I've grown to abandon that perspective and that philosophy. Now, I don't think... I think there is... I'll say this. I think that it also goes too far the other way, and I've seen people become content. Oh, my glass is half full. That's good enough. Or I've accomplished this much. Or I've done this much. And then they become content. And we should be at war against that happening in ourselves, especially. to the people get to the point where they nearly pretend that the negative exists. They nearly pretend that they don't have any flaws. And anything or anybody that tries to point out flaws to them is just trying to. It's just condemnation, and that's from the devil. And da 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 da. No, God is just positive, and God is just encouraging. The Spirit of God and God's people, all they do is encourage and be hopeful and never. And that's too far the other way. Anyway, we don't want to pretend that the negative doesn't exist, but I think, or that needs don't exist, or that shortcomings don't exist. But with proper perspective, it should keep us humble. With proper perspective, we should all be humble. With proper perspective, we should all be thankful. And with proper perspective, we should all be hopeful. And these are attitudes that we have as we work on filling our glass. As we work on filling our glass, we're thankful for all that we have, the tools that we have, the hope that we have, all that God has given us, where we've come from. Where things could be. That's an easy one. You can always say, well, things could be worse, and that's the least that we can say. I'd be glad if anyone had any corrections, or could bring any clarity to anything I've said. I'd be glad if anyone could contribute any scriptures that would support these ideas, or any other comments. God bless you.
I really appreciated the message, but seemed like there was a lot of content in there. I guess one thing that kind of stuck out to me, kind of made me think of the rich man and Lazarus. I guess I'm just going to read it. And it says, now there was a rich man, and he habitually dressed in purple and fine linen, joyously living in splendor every day. And a poor man named Lazarus was laid at his gate, covered with sores and longing to be fed with the crumbs which were falling from the rich man's table. Besides, even the dogs were coming and licking his sores. Now the poor man died and was carried away by the angels to Abraham's bosom, and the rich man also died and was buried in Hades. He lifted up his eyes, being in torment, and saw Abraham far away and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus, so that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool off my tongue, for I am in agony in this flame. But Abraham said, Child, remember that during your life you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus, bad things. But now he is being comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between us and you, there is a great chasm fixed, so that those who wish to come over from here to you will not be able, and that none may cross over from there to us. And he said, Then I beg you, Father, that you send him to my father's house, for I have 5 brothers, in order that he may warn them, so that they will not also come to this place of torment. But Abraham said, They have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. But he said, No, Father Abraham, but if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to him, If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be persuaded, even if someone is risen from the dead. It just seemed like as satisfied as the rich man was in this life, he was not considering those that were, seemed like Lazarus was even more grateful for even the very minor things that he was receiving or not receiving in this life. And then it gets flipped, and now even the rich man is finding himself in this humbling situation, and says, if he may come and dip his finger and water and cool my tongue. It just seemed like in this life, the hardship that Lazarus received was training his perspective. And the rich man had everything that he needed. He had no hardship, had no suffering. And that trained his perspective in the other way. He was ungrateful, merciless, and could not recognize somebody else's suffering or need.
Thank you, Brother Buddy. Many points that you said, I wrote down a few verses on a perspective, how you look at things, and I guess we'll always have that. I looked a lot, or look at the other side until we die. Let's not judge so quickly. One, of course, would be Naaman. Naaman, when he's the leper from Syria. And what does he say when he goes down to Elisha? He goes to Elisha, and he said, go jump in the lake. Jump in the river 7 times. And he took off in a huff, right? Behold, I thought he would just wave his hands on me. Abracadabra, and I'd be healed. And that was a false perspective. And then also Nathanael, when Jesus saw Nathanael under the fig tree. And what city was he from? Henry, do you know what city he was from? Come on, you can. Okay. So Nazareth. Come on, Nazareth, any? Pierce City. Anything good come out of Pierce City? You kidding? You know, I mean, not okay, sorry for those people who live in Pierce City. Sorry, Mike. No, I know. Wentworth, whatever, but Start City, connecting, Newtonia. Anyway, our perspective is brainwashed and prejudiced. And the worst sin of all that we can commit, I guess, you know, the first commandment, I guess, was thou shalt not have false gods, and that was idolatry. But the worst sin in Proverbs, of the 7 things that God hates, what's the one high above everything, Max? The worst sin of all, the 7 things God hates, the one that's high above any other one. I'm always picking on people. Begins with a P. Proud, pride. God hates pride so much. And we can get proud over anything. And always being on God, like you said, buddy, we're in a war. We want to be humble. God resists the proud, but gives grace unto the humble. Humble yourself. You know, He'll give grace to the humble when we do that. We have to to do that. And I just want to share a couple of stories when I was young to show you what type of person I was. I was 6 years old in the first grade. I was at the bus stop with my mom. And my mom had everyone takes the rapid transit in Boston. You don't need a car. You don't need one. You go here in the subways and trolleys. Anyway, my mother gave me an Old Nick bar. It's a chocolate bar. It's called Old Nick. And she had one. She unwrapped it. I'm 6 years old like that. She took a bite out of it and then gave it to me. And I took it and chucked it in the ground. She looked at me. What did you do? I don't want your germs. I should have got really beat for that one. I don't want your germs. Then when we were in Mexico, Acuna, about 15 years ago, we met with the Holderman Mennonites. We went to a poor person's house, Manuel Silva. Went to his house. He was the leader of that group in Mexico and Spain. It's right across the border from Del Rio. And I remember going to his house, and his house was bad. I mean, it could have been adobe, but it wasn't really nice. The streets were dirt roads, and it was, you know, but he invited to his house, him and his wife and children, and he said, when we sat down, you want anything to drink? And I said, sure, water. And their tap water was bad, the tap water. So he gave, I don't know, 50 cents or something to his son. He says, go up the street and get Robert a bottled water. I felt so frustrated. Well, I didn't ask for that. I would have drank the tap water, but I felt so guilty that he sent they weren't rich, sent him up the street to the machine and get a bottle of water or a jug of water for me, to show you how I'm still struggling with so many things like that. Just hearing that, it's something I have to work on, I guess, like that. Anyway, I could share other things like I shared with you yesterday, Yanni. One of my prejudices was, and maybe Bridget, you won't identify with this, but I'll share it quickly and identify. I grew up in Boston, which is a racist town, and when the blacks would play a lot of sports, they would get violent, and more violent than the whites. They say, man, they're not civilized, man. You don't want to play a game with them. They start fighting and all that and like that. But there is a game up in Boston. It's called ice hockey. And there isn't one black player. There wasn't when I was growing up. And it was the most brutal game you ever seen. They bash each other over the head with the hockey sticks, and they don't have any teeth. My brother had teeth. And there's not one black person. How my perspective was so bad, thinking that, yeah, watch out, those blacks. They're very violent, and they start fights, and they act like animals. The whites were 10 times worse, and they still are in many ways. But I had that prejudice that's in my background from South Boston. And it was a racist town. But I struggle with it. I've overcome it. And the Lord be magnified. I want to hear some of you other brothers' stories. And I have a song that I want Brother Buddy to lead after this. It's number 60 in the folder.
I'll make it quick. I just wanted to say that I just appreciated that idea of perspectives. And it does seem like it's something that the scripture bears out. Like I have this idea that whatever our circumstances, that has the power to change our perspective. And everybody has like little dogmas that they live by, things that they believe they would never do. But when circumstances change, perspectives can change. And I think like changes in your circumstance, whatever your situation is, kind of tests the bedrock of what's really important to you. You know, like if you think about like King Saul, he had these perspectives that were continually in flux. They were continually changing. Like every time he perceived that David was a competitor, he went wild with jealousy and rage and tried to kill him. And it's just this back and forth. Then he kind of gets humbled and he's like, oh, David, my son, you know, come back. And then he tries to kill him again. And it just goes back and forth. The man had continuously changing perspective based on his circumstance. And then you think about David, like when he was fleeing Jerusalem from his son Absalom. I wonder what David would have done, you know, like if he was not being challenged, if his power wasn't being challenged and someone came and threw rocks at him, perhaps that person would have lost their head. But because of his circumstance, his perspective had changed. I just think it's something that happens to all of us, and I think it really tests where we're at. When I got my first job, I had it for 3 months, and then we all got laid off. And there was only one company hiring, and they were the bad guys. You weren't supposed to go work for that company. They were the bad guys. And some people discouraged others looking for work from going there. I went there. They did a lot of, it was kind of the birth of social media, and there was like a lot of intimidation and bullying. And some of the strongest proponents for not working at this company, you know, they would discourage others by saying, you're going to ruin your career by going to work for this company. You're going to, it's better not to work at all. Well, these guys held out for the job with the good company, and they got called back, and it was like a false alarm. Wait a minute. No, there is no work for you to do. Sorry, you're still laid off. And those guys eventually came and worked for the bad company. And I mean, like, we have to be so careful about what we hold to as a dogma about something that can't be changed, because we just might find ourselves challenged someday in a way that forces us to reevaluate. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, Buddy said something about people being on drugs and having this pretty big challenge to overcome and things like that. And I'm sure plenty of you have had to go to Walmart from time to time, have been met with those stands of people that are out there trying to sell signs and stuff for like drug rehabilitation programs. And I guess I kind of question my mind sometimes whether it's like another just, you know, another hand to grab, or another mouth to feed, or something like that. And but the other day, so I met one of these men outside the Walmart, and they I think initially as I went in the store, I didn't really want to talk to them. I don't know if I was just in my own world or just didn't think that it was that important, but maybe I kind of trained myself to just talk to people that I might not necessarily want to, but I went and talked to this man, and actually had a pretty good conversation. I appreciated him. He was a man named Michael, and he was a 40-year-old teacher, or I guess he had been a teacher for years, and then he said that, like, he was watching a show that was pretty common. People really appreciated it maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and it was all about drugs and habits. And he said that he was watching this and was trying to understand why somebody would perpetually want to be on drugs and go and live in a hotel and, like, just blow all their money and live that life. And then he just woke up one day and said, like, I want to go do that. And so he just, like, threw his whole career, his whole life out the window just so he could go and do that. And he said after 2 years of that and spending every ounce of money that he had, he finally, I guess, he humbled himself and turned to God and decided to change his life. And I guess it's kind of, I don't know if anybody knows the program, but it's pretty challenging, and it has, I guess, a lot of accountability where, like, because they were in that habit, they have people that are, like, calling them nonstop on the phone, like, trying to keep tabs on them while they're out doing what they're supposed to be doing in the program. And I don't know if anybody thinks about that, but that would be, like, really a really humbling position to have to be put in, to be constantly watched and kept tabs on. And I was like I, even though I might not necessarily agree with the everything that they would teach, but I would think, like, the fact that this person was willing to submit himself to that so that he could overcome a pretty hard situation. I really appreciate that. And so it was, I guess I'm saying, like, don't ignore it just because it might have a specific label on it or a, yeah.
A quick comment. One of the verses when Buddy was saying that, I thought of it when grace. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15:10, by the grace of God, I am what I am. And we all can say that, by the grace of God. And your comment, Rob, I think of something I can Google up, because I have a cell phone now, and then Google up obituary, South Boston, 2010, something like that. And I did that just to see. And there were six young teenagers in my neighborhood, South Boston, white Irish Catholic, and six white teenagers, and they all hung themselves on different days of the week. They were all buddies, and they all hung themselves on different days of the week. And they said, you know, drugs, what was it? But we're in a war. We're in a war with the evil one. But, you know, it could have been me back then. I was close-knit to a lot of my friends and things. But it's just unbelievable. Six young teenagers, 16, 15, and they all hung themselves one day after the other. And a terrible thing. And it's the perspective in life. They have so much to live for, and yet they're caught in a, you know, in South Boston, it's not that poor of a lower middle class, but man, I mean, I knew some of the older ones, it would be their dads or something. The Lord be magnified.